Now stay tuned for the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call on 97.9 The Wren. The Wake Up Call talks with the people in Charlottesville and Albemarle County who are making a difference. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us again on a Sunday morning. Today, we're going to be talking about what is going on in Albemarle County and the public school system for 2020. Our guest today, Debbie Collins. She's Deputy Superintendent in the Albemarle County public school system. We also have Rosalind Schmidt, who's the Chief Operating Officer. Ladies, thank you for being here with us.
We're glad to be here with you. Yes, thank you for having us.
A busy time, and I know that you have many things to do, and we have lots to talk about. And the first question that I have is, well, let me tell listeners, my wife also works for Albemarle County Public Schools. She is a teacher. So every once in a while, I get a little bit of news from whether Seville Weekly or there was a lot of work from home last year. This year, one of the things that I got is I was working remote that day. She was home the day that the school board took their vote. And the original vote, the school board voted 4-3 to choose phase one, where everything went virtual. And then they took a 10-minute break, and one person changed their vote. And so the school system ended up going 4-3 for phase two. I would think that the two of you were following that very closely. Can you tell us a little bit more? It seemed very soap opera-esque.
I guess I'll start there. When we started thinking about how to start school, the Virginia has phases. So we thought about the phases and using that terminology, but we ended up calling it stages. And we went from stage one, virtual learning, all students doing virtual learning, no students in school buildings, and all the way up to stage five, where students are pretty much back full-time like we were in, last year. So when the board was trying to determine between stage one and stage two, the question really was about the students that do not have internet access from home. Could we bring them in or not? So you were absolutely right. When the first vote came in, we thought, okay, this is the direction we're headed. And then after the break, the second vote came, and it took us in a little bit of a different direction. Rosalind, I don't know if you'd like to add anything to how you were feeling about that or not.
I think it's interesting that you referred to it as a soap opera. It was certainly dramatic, but I think it also epitomized the weight of these decisions, and you could see it in all those board members how hard of a decision this is. It has impacts on students and families, and so I think we all felt that emotion and that drama, and it doesn't it symbolizes really the impact and the weight of these decisions in these times.
Is there any knowledge as to what happened in that 10-minute break to lead the one vote to flip?
I think I would just follow up with what Rosalind was saying. We know in the moment the board members were, as they were talking out loud, leaning one way at 1 minute and another way the other minute. So I think it really was just a matter of trying for the board member to have enough time to think it through, was my view on that, what happened then.
Let's talk about, now that the decision has been made, the first day of school is September 8th, correct?
That's correct.
So, can you tell us what will a school day look like for students and parents on September 8th?
Well, some of that depends on your grade level, or your, if you're an elementary school student or kindergartner in an elementary school, or a middle school student or a high school student. We have three or four different schedules depending on the grade band for students. But pretty much what will happen is students will log in through Zoom, and they will have a video conferencing experience with their classmates and their teacher. And so from there, depending again on the age of the child, you may be that you have an hour and a half of a video conferencing for a kindergartner, or up to a 90-minute class for a high school student. So the 90 minutes doesn't mean you'll be on a synchronous learning the whole time, but it would mean you would be with a teacher for that extended block. So then the day will just continue for middle and high school students. They will go be in four classes every day, this one. So they'll go from this 90 minutes, they'll have a break. They'll go, I think, 85, 90 minutes again, have lunch. The next class would be the third block of the day, and then there would be the fourth block of the day with breaks between them.
And who is coming to a building to participate in school?
So we are inviting the students that we feel like do not have access to the curriculum because of a couple of different things. One is they do not have internet access. So from their home, they cannot access the teacher's video conferencing or the materials that are going to be online for them in their courses. The second group of students are our special education students who virtual learning is not the appropriate way to access the curriculum. That's not the way they can learn what the standards of learning. And then the third group are a group of our English language learners whose English is a barrier for them. So they need our ESOL teacher's support to understand and access the curriculum because of the directions and the content of what they're learning. So those are the students that we're going to be inviting in to start on September 8th in the buildings. Principals right now are working on going through those and working to see which students actually do want to come into the buildings.
This is Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. We're talking about Albemarle County and the upcoming school year 2020. Our guest today, Debbie Collins. She's a deputy superintendent in the school system. We also have Rosalind Schmidt. She's the chief operating officer. Ms. Schmidt, do you know the number of students that are expected falling into any of these three categories?
So based on those three categories, we estimate at most about 1,500 students would qualify. So that is about 10% of our population. So principals, as Ms. Collins mentioned, are reaching out to those families to determine that, yes, they're invited, and then if they're going to come in. So we will have more firm numbers the next couple days.
Can I ask the ways that folks are reaching out to families if they don't have internet, or their special ed students or their English, they're called ESL, English Second Language. Is that the proper phrase?
English learners.
English learners. English learners. If they're English learner families, what are the methods being used to reach out to these families?
Typically, it's a phone call. If the child's an English language learner, then we have our ESOL staff reaching out to those families to make sure that the language is not a barrier and parents understand what we're asking them to think about and consider. But we've had, as you can imagine, a lot of educators reaching out to a lot of families over the last 2 or 3 weeks.
And I realize that I may be getting somewhat stereotypical, but hopefully not in a negative way. But if you're an English learner family and you're getting a phone call from a name and a number that you don't recognize, are you going to answer that?
Well, one of the things the ESOL office is really good at is leaving a message and letting them know who's calling, and that to give them a call back, or that they'll call again with a time. So our ESOL office does that kind of work masterfully.
And they're masterful in building relationships. They have a lot of existing relationships with these families to begin with. I think lots of credit to our ESOL department for their connection with families.
Once you have 1,500 students among how many schools does Albemarle have? I think a lot of times folks are, if you're unaware, Albemarle County is the largest county in the state. Is that correct?
Rosa, do you know how many square miles?
We are 729 square miles. I think we're about fifth largest in the state as far as geography. We are definitely the larger school system in this region with 14,000 students. So we have about 25 schools. And so when we say 1,500 students, that's spread amongst many facilities. And so those students would be in very small groups and certainly adequately socially distanced.
What I'm going to follow up with is the challenge that I would think that you are given to, for the health and safety issues. And Ms. Schmidt, that falls on you, doesn't it?
Yes, I'm a component of it. So we're responsible for a lot of the buildings and the transportation aspects of this. Yes.
What are the protocols that the county has come up with to make everyone feel good, from students and families to faculty and staff?
So obviously our number one priority is promoting the health and safety of all of those people in our environment. So we do that by layering of strategies. It's not one single thing, and it's not one size fits all. So everything from, we've done a lot of investment in our ventilation systems and protocols around increasing outside air and upgrading filters. We've done a lot of work on cleaning and disinfection protocols and supplies around that, strategies around promoting good health hygiene and hand washing, strategies around face coverings and other PPE. And again, the theme is, how many things can we put in place to layer and to improve the safety of all our building occupants?
Share something that you've learned doing this that other businesses could learn from you.
That's a good question. I think I think the number one thing we have learned, not the number one, but a primary thing we have learned is the value of feedback. And we have a lot of stakeholders to lean on in our community. And we've learned a lot in casting a wide net of listening. I think we have that ability as schools to be connected in our community, and I think other businesses would benefit from that as well. There's a lot of resources in our doctors in the area and the health district, mm-hmm. and just people that are willing and able to offer expertise. That's something we have leaned on heavily and have benefited from. Debbie, do you have any other lessons learned?
I know. I think that's exactly the lessons learned. I think that sometimes as a school division, you're insular. You do what you do, teaching and learning. And when we start thinking about when health becomes the major focus for us, having our community to support us and to help us think through all the different mitigation strategies, I think was amazingly helpful.
You mentioned, I thought I caught all the doctors in the community and getting some feedback from, I guess, some of them. Is there any specifics? I mean, I'm just curious because the area has hundreds, thousands of mm-hmm. doctors.
Yeah.
Did anybody step forward with something?
So we actually are benefiting from a weekly phone call that involves both representatives from the Thomas Jefferson Health District, but also a panel of local pediatricians. And again, this has been a weekly meeting, and it's just a good sounding board for all of us to vet options, for them to offer their expertise and suggestions. They have also participated in I guess we would call a forum for staff to ask questions of. You know, a lot of the doctors and pediatricians in the area have kids in our school system, and so there's just an eagerness to help and contribute.
I would just add to that early on, the doctors, you know, would send us emails and were very willing to be on our task force and to help us think through the kinds of questions we need to be asking ourselves, because, you know, the first thing you begin doing in all of this is ask the questions. And then as you keep getting answers and or not getting answers, the questions, if they can continue, then you typically can find many more solutions than if you just stop with one answer. So I think they have been very helpful. The community has been very helpful in helping us think through our different strategies and our different steps, and to continue to go back and ask the questions again and again to make sure that we've thought about all sides of the problems or the issues or the concerns.
And if I could just add one more thing, we also have a school health advisory board, mm-hmm. which has appointed members with local physicians, and they've been a good resource, obviously, to vet, but also they keep us informed of the latest research and resources. As we all know, there's the level of information around this topic is just constantly evolving, so they've been a good link to the latest and best research on the topic as well.
Our guest today here, Debbie Collins, she's the deputy superintendent at Albemarle County Public Schools. Rosalind Schmidt, she's the chief operating officer. Let's take our first break. Come back. There's lots more to talk about here for the upcoming 2020-2021 school year. Be right back. And here we are back talking about Albemarle County in the upcoming school year and the challenges that go with teaching under the COVID-19 issues. Debbie Collins, Deputy Superintendent in Albemarle County, can you tell us the difference between going almost immediately to the virtual learning program in mid-March and then this year, starting in September 8th, you have a lot of planning. How's that going for, we'll start with helping the teachers be prepared?
Well, one of the things that we know in March happened is it was an abrupt stop to what we were doing. And our goals in the spring were to keep students connected to school and to cover limited new learning in elementary schools and in the course subjects. As we start moving into towards September 8th, our goals are to provide a robust, high-quality teaching and learning experiences and teaching and learning in all content areas, specials, et cetera. So as you can imagine, moving from the goal of connection and limited learning to a full, robust, engaging day of school takes some thinking and some and lots of professional development. So we've spent the early part of the summer talking to our teachers, asking them what went well, what would they shift and change and think about as we move into the fall. We took those lessons learned, and we began to do professional development that we offered starting in July. And so that ranged from the tools that we had to purchase very quickly, how to learn how to use Zoom and video conferencing technologies, to what does assessments look like when students could Google any question that you have on their computer. So we spent a whole lot of time thinking and putting together resources for teachers. So as they're coming back in right now, we're able to put things in front of them for them to consider. Today was a division level day that we had all our teachers in and talked a little bit about. Actually, last week was the division level day that we had all our teachers in and had them work together across schools to develop curriculum and assessments. So we feel like we've started well, and we know that the next couple of weeks teachers will just begin adding to their level of expertise around virtual learning. I don't know if I answered all your questions or not.
Well, I think in so many ways, I think the challenge here, as mostly an outsider, I come from a family of educators, from my wife, a sister in a different part of the state, my mother, my grandmother, I mean, everyone on that side of the family. But it's people who've been in the, you know, been teaching for anything more than just a few years will have some sort of routine and something that they've learned and got a good feel for. And now you just might as well throw it all up in the air and start over again. And Albemarle County has to teach the teachers before the teachers can teach the students. Right?
That's correct. But, you know, the thing we have amazing educators, and we teach each other. So that's the part that we rely on, is that the sharing and the working together will take us a long way. So structures and those commitments were already there. And so that just allows us to get good very quickly around this. But you're right. A morning meeting in a virtual environment is very different than a morning meeting when you're sitting on the rug with 20 kindergarten or first graders. But what I see teachers doing is talking about that and thinking about the purpose of those kinds of conversations is for kids to have connections with each other. So what might we say or what might we do in this environment that will make those connections strong? So as they think about what they do and they push to purpose, the other ways of doing it seems to naturally come out of those conversations. But it's not natural for us, and it's something that we're really having to think about why we do things and what we need to continue to do and what, you know, we don't really need to teach children to walk to the cafeteria in a line right now. So we'll let that go for now, and we'll try to think about what it looks like to mute and unmute for a first grader or a second grader or even for adults.
Let me ask the two of you. Go ahead, please.
I was just going to say, Rosalind has young children. I didn't know if she had some ideas from what she saw in the spring or would like to think about it from a parent's perspective.
I'm the mom of a rising kindergartner in a second grade, so watching them on Zoom is quite entertaining.
I can imagine. Again, our guest, Rosalind Schmidt, she's the chief operating officer. Debbie Collins, she's the deputy superintendent, both working for Albemarle County Public School System, as we discuss what 2020 is going to look like currently for the teachers and staff, and upcoming September 8th for the students and families. Let's go through just, I'm just going to throw some various questions at you. Last year, Albemarle County kept almost or everyone on the payroll. Are you able to do the same thing this year?
Yeah, we're very fortunate to, and despite the abrupt closure, to continue to pay and keep all of our employees whole. I know they value that. We were very fortunate that we were able to do that because, you know, this situation is temporary, and we need to have an organization to come back to. That is our plan going forward at this point as we monitor financial situations. That being said, everyone will be working. They just may not be working their normal job, and so we're getting creative as the needs of our organizations is evolving. We will put people to work in different ways, and but again, we are very fortunate for what we were able to do in the spring, and we will continue to be able to keep people employed as we need an organization to operate with when we do return in person.
Will you be doing any hiring, whether teachers or possibly virtual substitutes or custodial staff for any extra cleaning / sanitizing that needs to be done?
So at this point, we feel like our existing staff right now can support our needs, so we are not actively hiring with it broadly, but there are probably likely some specific positions that were recently vacated that we may be filling. That information would be on our website. I've explained to a couple people that we were well positioned to tackle a lot of this. So, for instance, we are fortunate in our schools to have full-time nurses at all schools. Now, a lot of divisions in Virginia do not have that. We had low class sizes. We have really good counselor ratios. So we were in a good position to support a lot of the work that needs to be done. And so additional hiring on a broad basis is not needed at this point.
But we did hire about, I think, a little over 100 new teachers. Not that there were additional staff, but they are new employees that have been coming in over the last couple of weeks. So we're excited to have them with us.
Again, Debbie Collins, Deputy Superintendent, Rosalind Schmidt, Chief Operating Officer at Albemarle County, as we talk about what's going on in the public school system for 2020. So questions, beginning September 8th, in the phase two or plan, some students, you have to be invited to come into the building, right? No internet access, special ed student or English learners. Otherwise, you're doing school from home, correct?
That's correct.
Have you had a higher than normal percentage of families announce that they will be taking on homeschooling for the year?
Roz and I were just looking at numbers the other day of enrollment. So I don't know. At this time of year, enrollment always fluctuates. So I'm not sure that we could say at this point how many new families we have to homeschooling. That's something we would know more closer to the start date of school. Roz, I don't know if there's anything else you would add to that.
I would add, enrollment is one thing we're tracking for obviously many reasons, financial and staffing and other things. We'll know closer to date. This is a volatile time as far as registrations, but we do, we're realistic. We anticipate lower than projected kindergarten numbers, for instance. We know for various reasons families would either choose to postpone or pursue other options. But again, we're just monitoring the situation at this point.
Okay. So you say some things are fluctuating. So if whether it happens on September 8th or it happens later in the school year, what is the plan if a family just shows up with their child at the school because they're new to the county or the county has been unable to reach them, and so they just bring their child to the school thinking this is where we go to school?
Go ahead, Roslyn.
It's okay. So our buildings are open, right? And so if a family were to walk up into a building, there would be office staff to greet them, and we would help them if they were a new family through the registration process as we would normally do in normal times. And then if it was a current student, we would go over their options, if they were eligible for in-person, and if not, making sure that they had the technology and the internet to learn from home. But again, our buildings are open and our staff to receive that type of situation.
All right. Again, our guests today, Roslyn Schmidt and Debbie Collins from Albemarle County, as we discuss what's happening for the 2020 school year upcoming, all kinds of things going on. And I would think that the two of you have been busy with meetings and announcements and plans and extended days. Can you give me, and I guess the question that just popped into my head was, can you tell me what a normal day is? And I guess there is no normality to your day any longer.
We were just chatting the other day. We never know what day it is, and you have to constantly check your calendar to remember what day it is. I think I can speak for many employees that it's been long hours since March, right? And so I think that's the thing we laugh at the most is you just don't know what day it is. But I'll defer to Debbie to explain what a typical day is.
I think most of us are on a Zoom call by 8 or a little after, if not earlier than that. And Roslyn, and we've been early on, we were on a lot of calls together. We can have probably 10 or 8 or at least 8 a day so that you're constantly having, trying to think through the different scenarios and talk to lots of different people as you're trying to land and think about what is the next step, what do you need to figure out next, what's the documentation around that, what's the communication that needs to happen at this point in time. So it's a lot of, it's just a lot of meetings and a lot of conversation, trying to make sure that all our stakeholders are in those meetings, that we're checking and rechecking and thinking through each of the ways of looking at a situation. And the and then also trying to think about opportunities. What are the opportunities here that we might miss if we just continue to answer this question? So trying to always bring our heads up and broaden our perspective and our points of view.
I think many people... I would think many people have probably had some misperceptions around telecommuting, around the productivity of it. I think we have found our productivity probably has increased because, as Debbie mentioned, the level of connections that we're able to make and the number of people we're able to meet back-to-back in large groups and small groups, it's a lot of just conversations and collaboration, and we, I think, have thrived in that virtual world as far as meetings. It's just exhausting.
I can see where exhausting would probably be one of the first adjectives used around around your way of life for the last several months. And I'm for that, we're appreciative of you doing today's show. Rosalyn Schmidt, Debbie Collins here for Albemarle County Schools, telling us what to expect and how the year is being planned for 2020. Ms. Schmidt, one of your tasks has been to figure out school bus transportation, correct?
That's correct. So that's one of my areas of responsibility is transportation. We realized very early on that would be one of our most daunting logistical tasks. So we've been working on that since June as far as how do you meet the guidance of the health officials and still develop a practical and efficient way to bring students to school and bring them to school safely. So that's something we've been working on. We worked on early, and then it's pretty influential to any schedule that we were able to offer our instructional side of the house.
Well, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, I'd like you to tell us how you managed and what the plan is. Can we do that?
Sounds good.
All right. Be right back, everybody. Talking with Rosalyn Schmidt and Debbie Collins from Albemarle County Schools. 20 minutes left. Pay attention. And here we are, Rosalyn Schmidt, Debbie Collins, telling us the inner workings of the decision-making at Albemarle County Schools. And Ms. Schmidt, Chief Operating Officer, was just telling us about the school bus transportation plans. So will you continue with how that works?
Sure. So we knew, as I mentioned, that that would have been one of our loftiest tasks. So what we did is we've developed a series of health practices for our transportation, so the transportation services. So the first thing, the most obvious thing that students and families will see is that our capacity of our buses will be dramatically reduced. We will see one student per seat. And so that will take a 77-passenger bus down to 24. And so that's the first thing we'll do. We will require the driver and all students on the bus to wear masks at all times. And then we'll also put hand sanitizer on the bus to promote hand washing while on. We will increase ventilation through the use of windows and roof hatches. And then in addition to reducing the capacity, we'll be very stringent on how we board. So students will be in assigned seats and board back to front and then unload front to back. And so there's less mixing and of students walking by each other. With that reduction in capacity, we know that's going to make our the number of routes increase. And so you'll hear a common plea and a message out to families that if you can drive your child to school, please do so. That allows us to serve those that need the transportation quicker and safer. So that is a common theme that we're just asking our families to partner with us on, that if you're able to provide your transportation yourself, please do. And then if you need it, we will provide it safely.
Okay. So these two questions immediately pop into my mind, and I don't have any kids in the school system, so I would think you've been asked these before. If you're using the windows for ventilation, what happens during the winter?
Yep. So, and during the winter or on your rainy day, so when we did some tests with it, and we think if we can crack just the front window and the back window, it creates enough circulation, especially when the bus is moving, to promote air. So obviously on a good sunny day, we'll open all the windows, but there's still opportunities for ventilation either on inclement and rainy days as well.
Okay. And I thought I heard you mention assigned seats, correct?
That is correct. Assigned seats does a couple things for us. It first manages and makes sure that who is supposed to be on the bus is on the bus and we're not picking up extra students, but it also promotes a boarding and an unboarding process where kids aren't passing each other. And then it also helps in contact tracing in the unfortunate event that we would have a case on a bus. It allows us to know who's been exposed in that situation.
And what happens if my child has to sit next to the bully on the bus?
So our bus drivers are good at collaborating with school staff in dealing with behavior management. And so that in that situation, we would work with the students and make appropriate changes if needed. But again, we rely on the systems that we have. And again, we have good systems where drivers partner with schools to help with behavior management. And that would be no different in that situation either.
All right. Sounds like a lot of great planning going on at Albemarle County for the school year. Rosalind Schmidt, Chief Operating Officer. We also have Debbie Collins with us. She's the Deputy Superintendent. As 2020 for the students and the families starting on September 8th, the teachers have they started this week. And plenty going on. Ladies, Charlottesville City Schools voted to go all virtual. What do you think led for the two different decisions?
Well, one of the things I know is that because Albemarle County is such a large county, we have more difficulty with our access for our internet. So a lot of our students in the rural regions do not have internet access. And I don't think that is the same for Charlottesville City. I think because they're in the urban ring, they're smaller, have a smaller footprint, their students are able to access the internet and broadband so that is easier for them than it is for us. So I think that's one major difference.
My understanding is the decision was made to go all virtual first, and then they've had subsequent conversations about serving those same student populations that we talked about serving in our buildings. So I don't know the outcome of those decisions. I think it's important to note that their process of decision making was slightly different, but we may end up in the same spot.
Is there any concern, or if a family that has no virtual access, no internet access, that chooses to go virtual, is that their responsibility?
So if a family doesn't have internet access, they still have a choice whether they want to come into the building or not. And so if they choose to stay home, we will still serve that student through use of paper packets and thumb drives, and I'll allow Debbie to expand a little more on the sexual piece. But that student will still be served.
Thank you. You knew where I was going with that. I appreciate that. So the county will assist.
Absolutely. And a lot of those pieces we put in place last spring because our buildings were closed and students had no access to internet at the building. So we know how to deliver instruction to students. They all will have computers. So thumb drives became an important vehicle for us, and paper packets for some younger children became something that we figured out how to do. And with our bus drivers being able to deliver some of those kinds of resources and information to our students, that's also an added benefit this this fall.
Has there been any, is there a plan for getting students, especially the younger students, any books or material to read that's not just a school book, but more of a fun book to read, something to just enjoy that they may not have access to on their own?
Absolutely. Our media specialist librarians have been meeting last week, and that's the very conversation they're having. How do we get these books, the libraries full of books out to students? So they're beginning to develop and talk about what a checkout system would look like, how we could get books out to students, how we could get them back, et cetera. So that they're working to think through that and to include our transportation department in how, thinking about how to do that. I don't know, Rosalind, if you have any more
That's exactly what I was going to say. As I mentioned earlier, we are keeping everyone employed. We're just maybe using them a little differently, and that's a great example is we're developing some ways that our transportation staff can support the distribution of supplies, whether that's books or art supplies or et cetera. And so we know that that is a critical connection we can make between building and families at their home.
Speaking I don't know that this qualifies exactly the same way, but when you talk about employed in different ways, how does a phys ed teacher do the work virtually?
Well, that's one of the things that we saw happening in the spring. Our phys ed teachers are amazing at what they can do with kids. We, from offering choice boards where students were able to have a variety of options to be active and to work on skills, to this year where they're going to be synchronous as well, and they're going to be offering our families and our students many different options, depending on what the skill set is that they're working on. So they're actually pretty excited about what they can accomplish through a video conferencing with students.
I would think that despite all the great planning that's going on by everyone, I know that there are negative comments coming in. It's not that hard to find them, whether you read about them in news articles, on social media. I saw an article somewhat recently where a working mother of three said that school plans seem to not take childcare dilemmas into account. The quote was, "You figure it out," is what they tell parents, because her kids couldn't go to school. And it seems that parents and families that work find this to be true. And I thought, well, yes, but parents also consider school to be a type of childcare. And so I'm curious how you said that all the feedback is being looked at for solutions, or that's how I sort of twisted it in my head. How you take these comments and what you do with them, whether discard them because you've heard so many, or whether you find them and look for the solution to them.
So I think
Well, the first thing I would say, reflecting on an earlier question you had as far as lessons learned, I think a lesson learned here is someone will find a flaw in any decision we make, and that's something that we've just had to accept, right? That there's just no good answers in any of this. And so the best thing we can do is just that, read every email. I think we can all honestly say that we read every email that we receive and reflect on it, and it informs our decision. In terms of the child care piece, we get it. As I mentioned, I'm a mom of a kindergartner or second grade. We have the same stresses. I think what I would say to those parents is that we heard you and we're trying, and this is temporary. It's all temporary. I think that's what we have to remind each other, that it's heavy right now, but we'll figure it out, and we're hearing and we're working towards it.
And I would just add that what we heard from parents about flexibility and schedule is exactly the reason we chose the elementary schedule that we did, where there's an a.m. option and a p.m. option, and that we can try to work with families on what might suit them best, whether they have they need everybody to be online first thing in the morning, or they need to spread out, depending on how they can do that. The other piece that we will be offering is that we will be videotaping and recording all the lessons so that parents and children can look at them later. So if it's not possible to get on to a synchronous call during the day, that the parents have access to the information and the lessons at any point in time that week. So trying to think about how to be flexible and how to be empathetic and how to help work with our parents. Our principals have really taken that part and are working very, you know, they're working night and day as well, trying to figure out how to accommodate as many different schedules and as many different needs as we possibly can.
Ms. Schmidt, you mentioned you have a rising kindergartner, correct?
That's correct, yes.
And Albemarle County also has a growing number of English learner students and families. Is anything, I'm making an assumption here, but I would be concerned that there's possibly some kindergartners out there and their families. There's got to be a couple anyway who might not have computers, might not know how to use a mouse, but the family wants to be at home. Is there any work being put forth for lesson taught on how to get that family started with the technology?
Yes, there is. I don't know if I can absolutely jump in here, but one of the things that we have purchased is iPads for students for through two. Typically, we would have one iPad for every two students. That's what we had in the spring. We distributed all that we had and actually had some that weren't picked up. So this year, we actually purchased some more, so that all our kindergarten students will be issued an iPad, and teachers will work with students and families on how to use that iPad. So that's a little easier than a computer for young children. It's touch and swipes, and that allows us to pretty quickly put technology in hands of students that they can use.
That's awesome. We just have 2 minutes left, and I mean 2 minutes. Families received a lot of food and meals from Albemarle County from March to June last year, being delivered by bus, and people don't realize that. Are you going to be able to do something similar this year?
Yeah, so I think it's one of the things we were I was personally most proud of that we were able to set up that quickly in March. And as you said, we were able to offer meal service. We offered it at multiple school locations and then transported it to strategic neighborhoods throughout the county. And that's something that we set up pretty fairly quickly in March and is actually extending through this month. We're coming up on the end of that. So that was a program that we were proud of and had some lessons learned from it. As we transition to the school year, our service model will look a little different, but we'll actually hopefully serve more students. We plan on serving meals along bus routes. And so we have a link on our website for families to request and opt into that. And so those meals would be delivered on bus routes, and then the student would put their ID number in, just like they would if they were in the cafeteria, and if they they would pay if they were a regular status, and if they qualified for free or reduced meals, they would receive that meal at free or reduced price. So that's something, again, another planning in the works this summer that will roll out that first week of school.
Is there a way to do it if you don't have internet access besides the website?
Yep, we have a phone number to our child nutrition site. And again, a lesson learned this spring is our schools know those families that don't have internet and make sure that they reach them in different ways than just the emails that we push out.
Again, just an incredible lengthy time for Debbie Collins, Deputy Superintendent, and Rosalind Schmidt, Chief Operating Officer of Planning at Albemarle County Public Schools for 2020 to get off the ground. Ladies, I want to thank you so much for being here today for 60 minutes on Sunday Morning Wake Up Call.
Thank you so much for having us. We appreciate it.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call on Real Oldies 97.9 The Wren. The Wake Up Call is produced by Dan Gould. Show archives can be found at cvillepodcast.com. Be sure to join Rick next Sunday morning at 11 a.m. for The Wake Up Call, only on 97.9 The Wren.